Hello and welcome to episode 73. We are very sorry this episode has been a bit delayed this week. Ankit and I got a bit caught up in our own personal situations, but we're back and we're here, and we have an amazing guest today. We're honored to share our conversation with Major Archie Acharya, a communications engineer from JNU who now serves the Indian Army. She's been posted at the line of control, the Rapid Battalion, as part of Strike Corps and electronic warfare units and formations.
Today, Archie talks to us about women in male-dominated workforces, the challenges she's had to overcome, and the backward mentalities that she still deals with on a daily basis. She shares thought-provoking and often hilarious anecdotes from her training, and she also delves into the importance of having a stable support system while being out there, conquering your fears and chasing your dreams. So without further ado, let's jump right into the show. Welcome to the show, Archie. Lauren recommended you from the day she met you, and we cannot wait to hear more about your story.
Okay, I'm ready for it.
So let's just go back to the beginning, Archie. Where were you born and raised, and what did your parents do?
So I am from Indore, and it is in Madhya Pradesh, the center of India, and none of my family members are in army, or nobody in my whole family history joined the defense. So we are three sisters, and I lost my father when I was 5 years old, and my mother raised the three of us, and she never stopped us from doing whatever we wanted to do. So, I wanted to join the defense since I was a kid. And it was long back when I was in class 8 or 9 that I saw that thought-provoking poster, "Do you have it in you?" I don't know if it is not the campaign right now which Indian Army runs for its recruitment, but that back then, that was a campaign which Indian Army was running on. So I got really inspired, and I thought I'll fill in the form of NDA, and I was waiting for my class 12 to just get over, and I just filled that form, and later I realized that women are not allowed, and that was pretty surprising for me, as there was nobody in my family to, you know, even tell me how to apply and join the defense forces. So I waited for my graduation to get over, and then I joined the army, and that's how it has been. And of course, in the army, what else would you like to know? Would you like to know about how difficult it was for me to get into the army, because I had nobody to guide me, and I just wanted to wear that uniform. And, you know, it makes me feel so happy because I don't have to, you know, think about what I'm going to wear tomorrow.
Yeah, that is something that, yeah, that's the best thing for, especially, you know, for women. I think that is amazing.
Yeah.
Because I'm going to start a new job now where I will be required to wear a uniform as well. Can't really talk about it much, but I'm very excited for that. So, Archie, you were and you still are an engineer. So,
of course, for women to join the defense, they have to do a minimum graduation degree. It could be any kind of graduation. So I chose engineering as my field because I was a science graduate. I could have done a bachelor's in science as well, but then I thought probably BTech would stand a better chance, because if I don't make it to the defense, then I should have my options open for other things as well. So that's why I chose engineering as my option, in electronics and instrumentation was my stream of choice.
Well, Archie, you did your Masters of Technology in Communication Engineering from Jawaharlal Nehru University. Both Ankit and I worked. Yeah, so we were quick to jump to the conclusion that you studied there as a day scholar, and were probably quite actively involved in politics too, because I guess that's a general impression, at least I get from like the media and like what JNU is all about. So how did you end up at JNU, and were you involved in this, like, you know, this hype of politics and this culture?
Not at all. I was, we've got it wrong. I mean, I got my graduation degree. I mean, I got my post-graduation degree from JNU, but I did my post-grads from the army. So it's like we are given a leg of, say, 1 year or something to pursue our higher studies. So I did my higher studies. But then at the end of it, like, I submitted my thesis to JNU. So I was never a day scholar at JNU. I got my graduation, I mean, I got my thesis submitted in JNU. The staff from JNU came, they took all my interviews and everything. How I got a degree. It was not like I was a day scholar. But then, yeah, you're right. JNU could have also been a reason for me to join the defense. But no, I wanted to join the defense forces since I was a kid.
Yeah, and but in my personal experience, Archie, being in the Indian Armed Forces does make one quite fiercely patriotic and even quite political to a large extent. So in this day and age, where do you think one can draw the line between patriotism and nationalism?
Yeah, you're right. If I talk about my own experience in the army, I didn't know the difference between patriotism and nationalism, honestly, when I wanted to join the defense. I was so inclined towards serving for the nation that I think majorly it was patriotism. Mm-hmm. But I'm just trying to do my bit. And as long as I can serve for the country, I want to do my best. Mm-hmm. So that's how it is so far for me.
Yeah, and the reason I said my personal experience, Archie, is because my dad went to the National Defense Academy in the 70s, and growing up, I was always proud of him. And you can even say that I was proud for him, because even as a child born in the 90s, I knew that I would never be able to apply to the NDA, even if I wanted to. And till date, the NDA, like you mentioned earlier, it does not accept female students.
It does not. I think we'll take a lot of time to allow women to join the defense after class 12th. I don't know what's the reason behind it. Yeah. But frankly speaking, I think I'm glad that at least they have now women in the ranks, like, you know, in the Corps of Military Police, they've started inducting women in the ranks also. So that way, I think we are growing. And in times to come, I'm sure that we'll have women commanding a unit, and you know about the recent fighter pilot being a woman.
Yes.
So things are changing. And I'm sure that we will get command of our troops.
Yeah, especially about the first woman fighter pilot. I'm so excited by this, because growing up, you know, I've been surrounded by a lot of talk about women getting into the armed forces, especially because my dad was a fighter pilot. So how do you become a fighter pilot was a question. And some of the explanations I heard were quite biological in nature, like women, it's like 8 times the gravity up there, and how women's bodies would cope with that. And it's just, you know, and as you grow up, you start looking at women in other countries who are fighter pilots and flying these planes, 8 times the gravity or whatever. What is wrong with just Indian women?
There's nothing wrong with Indian women. I believe there has to be a change in the mindsets of the people. So, you know, what we are facing right now is, like, I'll tell you about my own experience. So when I joined the unit for the first time, I see everybody was a man. And like, I had no woman around me. I was in JNK and I didn't know what to do. So it was difficult. And but then, you know what, you got to take your own time and you got to gauge them, what they want, what they're expecting of you. And you don't have to make it too specific to you know, that you are a woman, so you won't be able to do this, or you are a man, so you would be able to do this. And if that idea is clear in your head, then I'm sure that you'll be able to disseminate it into your ranks also. Because in case you have that thing in your mind that, you know, I'm a woman and I can't do it, then I'm sure that the men under you will also think that you're a woman and you won't be able to do it.
Yeah.
So I think more than that, what is required is that you got to know that you can do it always and every time. And you don't have to wait you are not dependent on your gender to do a particular kind of thing.
Mm.
So that's what I feel. And here also, like, it's a totally male-dominated organization. Like,
everybody... It's an institution.
It's an institution, right? Yeah. And, you know, so when I joined training academy also, my hair were chopped. Like, I had 2 long ponytails. I went to the academy and I was like, you know, proud of myself that, you know what, I've joined the officers training academy at Chennai. And I was so happy. You know, first 10 days you are shown different 10 kind of dresses which you got to wear. You know, in this occasion you got to wear this, then in that occasion you got to wear that. So that's very, very, you know, exciting and everything. But then then the day after all that goes away, you're sitting right in front of the mirror. Mm-hmm. That lady comes, make two ponytails and chops them off. So I got a pixie and it was quite late that I realized that pixie cut was just not the cutting of my hair. It was about my attitude, my ego, and everything was falling off with it. It was like we were all treated as equals, guys or girls. They are not treated differently. The training, the procedure. Of course, there are certain physical limitations which women might face during the training, and one should not expect a lot. And so is with the guys. You can't expect a lot from men also. Mm-hmm. So it breaks that thing from your mind that you can do as good as a man can do. So I think that's how it started seeding on me, and I got that thought out of my head that I'm gonna enter an organization, or like you said, an institute, where I might be the only one, and there'll be people who would not know or will obviously question my abilities or capabilities to do a particular thing. So that's how it's been.
But just going back to the part where your hair was chopped off, Archie.
Yeah.
Was there any explanation given for why this was necessary for a woman?
No, there was no explanation. So I'll tell you what is it. It is like, when you go into the academy, you go into such a rigorous training. It's so backbreaking that you don't get time to wash your hair. You don't get time to, make pleats out of it. And because you're supposed to you're supposed to make a figure of eight in your hair, and the kind of length which I had, I couldn't have made it. But for men, generally guys have short hair, right? So it's like chopping them off. And so the moment I reached the academy, they said that I had mid-length hair, so I couldn't have made those long pony or something, that figure of eight. I chose to cut my hair, and so were so many of others. So in my batch, we were 40, and I think 38 of us got them cut because of the convenience. I bought one bottle, which was of 1 liter of shampoo, and I used it for 1 year.
What? Of course, yeah, I can believe that.
Because every day, I washed my hair twice, and still it didn't get over, and I was like, oh my god, what's happening?
But Archie, what about the Sikhs? Sikhs, they wanted to maintain the long hair and beard, so how did that work?
I had one officer with me, colleague. She was a Sikh, and she chose to keep her hair long, and there were other girls also who were not like two of them I was talking about, the one who didn't choose to cut their hair. One was a Sikh and the other one was just not a Sikh, but then she was in love with her hair, and then she said that I will not. But then you know what happened? They had no time to wash their hair, and it was all about hygiene. And because there's so much of the weather is not very conducive, and then having your hair chopped off is a better situation any day. But then, because they were bound to a religion, they had to keep it, and so did the men. I mean, the guys also kept their hair long because of their religious constraints. So they managed it.
Hmm. And Archie, we had spoken to Lauren Anderson on episodes 69 recently, and she mentioned that there were a lack of uniforms when she was one of the first women in the FBI SWAT team. So as one of the earliest women serving the Indian Army at the LOC, the Line of Control, the Rapid Battalion, and the Electronic Warfare Units, what was your experience like? Was it similar to what Lauren had also experienced?
So I'll tell you what, I am the first batch of women officers to have commissioned with 1 year of training. Mm. Earlier, women officers were only, given 6 months of training in the country, like 3 months first term and the 3 months second term. But then with my batch, probably they decided to have new terms and conditions. So they made the training for 11 months. So the day I reached the academy, of course, I had to wear very loose fitting clothes, and they were not, I was surprised that Oh my God, why are they calling the cadets when they don't have the size? But then the thing is that whichever size you wear, you have to ultimately get them altered. I went as waist 28 and my waist for 22. So whatever waist they give me, I have to get it altered anyway. I'll tell you a very funny incident when I went to the tailor first day. I got a very loose fitting, shorts with me. And then I took my shorts to him. We were issued with four shorts. I mean, one thing was four pair each. Okay. So I took it to the tailor and I told him to reduce the size to my waist. So he said he just made one of them of my size and rest were -2, -2, -2. So I was like, why is it like one is 28, one is 26, one is 24 and one is 22? So he said, you wait and watch. After 3 months, I was 24. I had to get my 26 and 28 altered. And after 3-4 months, I was 22. So the last limit I went was 22. So whatever size I wear, I had to get it altered to my size. So I was unbelievably thin. In fact, all of us had reduced a lot of weight.
Yeah, I remember my grandmother always complaining about how my dad was 16 when he went to the NDA. And, you know, he was the youngest child in the family, four other siblings, and he was always fed a lot of food, but he was very handsome, according to me. Anyway, he came back every holiday that he got back, my grandmother would be so disappointed because he looked like a scarecrow. And, you know, in India, there's this whole thing about how dark you've become after you've been standing out in the sun. So, oh, my son used to be so handsome and so fair-skinned, and now he's so dark and he looks like a scarecrow.
Similar thing happened with me, you know, because if it's just an air training, what happens is that we get only 21 days in between as a term break. Mm-hmm. So in first term and the second term, we got only 21 days of leave. So when I came back from Chennai at, we get trained at 50 degrees centigrade in the morning at 4 o'clock. So it can't be better.
Yeah.
And it was like I had pimples all over my face and I was dark and I was unrecognizable. So when I came to Bombay to visit my family, they were all... I just waved at them and there was nobody to recognize me. And I came right in front of my sister and said, hello, it's me, your sister. And she's like, oh my God, what's wrong with you? I still remember her and I still remember my mom was in shock because for 3 days, like each day I used to get up in the morning at 4 and I used to ask for food. Mm-hmm. And my mom used to get up at 4 in the morning and she used to give me everything. And I used to eat like, eat so much. And then after 2-3 days, I got so tired. And then I slept for around 72 hours nonstop. Because I was so damn tired. Initially, I thought that maybe I'm all right. But then I was so tired that I never got up for almost 3 days. I was sleeping and then my mom was like, at least brush your teeth. It was very funny. And people were coming to see me as if, you know, I am an outsider. I'm an alien. It was very funny.
Good thing you're on the Desi Outsiders podcast.
But Archie, how do you think things can be made better for women in the armed forces? Because, I mean, from what you've just said, it doesn't seem like they don't cater well for females.
It's not like that. I that's what I said. Things are changing. Like in my time, we didn't have the uniforms of our size. But then it's been 9 years now that I have been in the army. And now when the batches are coming up, I'm interacting with them. I have stayed in dorms. These young batches which are commissioning, they are having their separate rooms and things are evolving because now men have started accepting women in the army. There was a time when there was nobody and no woman serving with them, so they had that hesitation that how will a woman officer perform. Like when we go on exercises, I'll tell you, in deserts, I was there in the deserts for almost 6-7 months. Okay, and there you have to stay in damp tents, and you don't get flowing water, you don't get electricity. It's always, you're dependent on generator, and there are timelines for a generator. You can't have generators on all the time. And the temperatures are really bad, but then you want the coolers to be on. But then while you're on exercise, that is the thing which matters the most, because a man can go and pee wherever he wants to. I mean, he can hide under the bushes, but being a woman, I can't do that. I mean, while I was staying in the tent, I had to be literally cautious. So things were evolving, because earlier they didn't cater for that kind of toilet setting. Basically, it's a setting which is done along with the tent. So earlier they didn't have that. But now, because women are getting inducted in the army, they have that kind of setting with them, in which if a woman also goes along with the troops in desert, they cater for their facilities. So I think we are evolving. But then, yes, like you said, Meenal, we still need to work a lot more, and we need to see the other countries, how they are evolving. Of course, we are behind. We are developing. That is why. But then I'm sure we will be, you know, better and better each day.
And so, Archie, are women leading the planning for this evolving, this evolution that is taking place now with the planning that has to take place even for the toilet setting? Are women the ones leading that?
Yeah, definitely. Because I'll tell you about my own story. When I was going on an exercise, there was a... Actually, what happens is an officer might understand your needs, but a jawan, I mean, the ranks won't understand, because these ranks have come from very backward areas. And I'll tell you a recent incident. I was sitting with two men in my office, and one is from UP, the other one is from Haryana. And I was just interacting. Both of them have girls who are just 7 or 8 years old. And I was just interacting whether or not you allow your girls to join the defense. So, you know, the kind of mentality they have is like, I'll speak that in Hindi if you don't mind. They'll say that they'll say, "Kya karna hai, madam? Isne to ghar ka hi kaam karna hai, bade hoke. Kya karna hai? Isko fauj mein bharti karna."
So I'm just going to translate that for our international audience who are listening. That what can you possibly do in this situation? They have to grow up and take care of their homes at some point or the other. So what's the point of sending them into the armed forces?
That is what happens. So imagine, like, I am commanding them. I am sitting with them and working together with them. I'm eating with them. I am working with them. And how will they understand me? I mean, if they can't understand the daughter, they can't understand their own wife, I'm sure they won't understand me.
But you are doing you're taking the first step in the right direction, I feel, Archie, because you're setting an example for them.
Yes. So I had a long discussion with them. It didn't end there. I almost had a word with them for around an hour or two. And then I wanted to know the reason why they are thinking about it. So I wanted to know what was exactly running in their minds when they were saying that kya karna hai. So what my main aim was that, you know, tomorrow, if the girls are not empowered, then they will only have a problem for themselves. They got to be independent. So was the problem with our male fraternity here. Like when I went for an exercise, they didn't cater for my toiletries or my toilet setting. And I was like, hello, where do you think I'm going to go? While we were traveling from morning 4 o'clock to the next day morning 4 o'clock, for 24 hours I've been traveling in a truck. I want to go. I can't go behind the bushes. I had to knock at other people's door and go to the washroom, because I didn't know what to do. I was wearing a uniform, and in that terrain, Rajasthan, everybody looks at you as if, you know, you are an alien. A girl wearing a pant is like, oh my God, who is she? So I was giving them that look, and then they were like, oh my God, I don't know who is she. So, but then, you know, you got to make them understand that it's not like that. You got to change their mindset. So someone has to take a stand. So I think our batches are taking a stand on telling them, because that's how you earn respect. It's not like, you know, when you're in the unit, you got to play with them, you got to eat with them, you got to pray with them, you got to do everything and anything with them.
And it's not even like Meenal and I going up to them and telling them about it. You're actually setting real life examples that, listen, we're doing the exact same things and this is what your daughters can do.
Exactly. So I wanted to tell them about this only. I was telling them that, would you enjoy? Okay, so I just gave an example because women right now are in the officer cadre only in the Indian Army. They are not in the ranks. So I was telling him that tomorrow, if your daughter joins the Indian Army as an officer, would you not enjoy the same privileges? Or would you want to be a soldier in the army always? Or would you want to be a father of an officer?
Mm-hmm.
You would always choose to be father of an officer because you would be getting all the perks what a father of an officer gets.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
So if you want to become, if you want to remain a jawan or a sipahi all your life, then so be it. Or you can change it and try and make your daughter independent so that you are, you know, given that much respect and privilege. Mm. So then they were like, no, you're right and all. So, I mean, the thoughts won't evolve in a day. You will have to continuously try and try and try. And then it's only when you yourself, you know, live with them and you prove them wrong that, you know, women are not just men for setting up your house, but they're also responsible to set up a family and become independent, and they can work. For whatever, I mean, I am tested to my physical limits. I can tell you, I have never ran 40 kilometers ever in my life. But then when I was trained, I was trained. Mm. I ran and I didn't know what to do. I mean, just 10 days prior, we are told that you have to run 40 kilometers. But then, you know, you feel that this is not end of life. You got to run for your life.
Yeah. And you're not just running, are you? You also have
a exactly.
water bottle. You have so many things trapped to you while you're running.
Absolutely.
You're probably running
Absolutely.
Uphill as well.
And you know, after every 5 kilometers, you have a checkpoint where you're given all the refreshments. That's not a problem, though you don't feel hungry at all. You just want to wash your face and move on.
Yeah.
So you don't get that much time that you know, you'll drink water and you make your stomach heavy. You have to keep yourself as light as possible.
Yeah.
So that's about the running. But forget that. But what I'm trying to say is I was running with many other men over there.
Mm-hmm.
So there was no difference that, you know, he's running and I am sitting idle. Or so I don't think that there's any difference between the kind of training which we get or the kind of thought process which we build in. It's just about the mindset which needs to be changed at a certain point in time.
But while we're on the subject of women in male-dominated workplaces, Archie, I grew up in India, and most of the girls that I knew of growing up, they went into either IT, engineering, if not medicine,
yeah.
right? And yet, a lot of them slowly, they have started to leave the workforce. I can see that now on Facebook, thanks
yeah,
to Facebook, we can
yeah.
see. They're all slowly beginning to leave the workforce soon after their marriage, sometimes after pregnancies, etc. So, you know, there are so many women educated in male-dominated fields, but these fields, they continue to remain male-dominated because there's
yeah.
a reduced impact of the female workforce in these areas. Have
yeah.
you also, like, have you also experienced something like this?
Actually, I'll tell you what happens with women. It's not about that women are leaving the job. It's about they feel inside that, are they really worth it? I mean, they try to tell themselves, like, say you're given a job. I'll tell you a very recent example. Like in corporate, what happens if you're given a task and you're told that I'll select a few people amongst your team and so and so. So if a girl is performing really well, you know, what will she think? She'll herself think that I don't think I'm pretty good at that. I mean, she'll herself, I think that that thing is pretty much common in women. So I think that women have to start thinking that they are good, they are better.
Yeah.
And the moment they start thinking that they are better, I'm sure they won't take a stand like that. It is, so if you keep the personal issues aside that they have a kid and they have to look after the family, I don't think so. I mean, even a man can do that if a girl is good, but the girl has to think that she's better. The problem is that women in India, they don't think that they are better. Why is it that only Indian women, maximum Indian women, try to leave the jobs after they are married or after they are pregnant? It's because they always think that I am better at this and not at that.
Yeah.
I mean, if I have to be given two fields, say if I am working or if I'm sitting at home, I will choose home because I think I'm better at that. Because, you know, that comes from within, where you're better at. If you talk about this thing, it is always there in women, in each and every woman's mind, that maybe that guy is better, that is why he's got a promotion.
Yeah.
And maybe I was not so good, that's why maybe I won't get it. So that thing is always there. I see it in my friends, that's why I'm telling you. They always think that they won't get promoted because the boss is also a male. And he will promote a male only and he won't let us grow.
Mm-hmm.
So that is also a problem which a lot of women face.
And there was also this very interesting conversation I had with a white colleague of mine recently.
Mm-hmm.
Where she was telling me, did you know about... She was watching a documentary and she heard that a lot of Indian women who go into these big universities to study male-dominated fields, they do so because their families are also encouraging them to do this so that they meet potential grooms or prospects who are also educated in fields that they feel are respectable. So if a woman wants to marry a guy who went to IIT, then, you know, I might meet him if I myself am at IIT. And it's just so crazy when I heard that. I was almost like, should I be feeling offended by this? But at the same time, I also see the logic in that, because this is from an actual documentary where women were questioned and interviewed, and this turned out to be the outcome. And
No, you're right. I mean, but that never happened with me. I didn't join the army because I wanted to marry an army officer. I'm not yet married though.
Mm.
So honestly, no, but a lot of women in the army get married to army officers. That's besides the point, because they are from the same organization, so they kind of know them each other well.
Yeah.
But honestly, it is not like that. I mean, for me, at least.
A few years ago, I listened to a family member who was boasting that her daughter got into this prestigious engineering college. And she was boasting that, just wait and see, my daughter is going to marry someone who has at least been to this prestigious engineering college.
Oh my goodness.
And this is something that came from a mother a few years ago. And that's something I got reminded of as well when my colleague brought this up. And I'm pretty convinced that it's not fantasy when you hear things like that. That is there playing at the back of their heads.
Well, Archie, I spoke to Lara Lagmani the other day. She's a presenter on a radio show in Scotland. And she herself also has a really incredible story. And we will be interviewing her soon as well. But you know, she's interviewed people like Shah Rukh Khan, Aishwarya Rai, and all these big Bollywood stars. But she said personally that she only feels awed by people serving in the Defence Forces, you know, because she feels like they are the real heroes, according to her. So you are also like a real life hero for us and to many, many young girls in India. So I was wondering if you have any real life heroes as well yourself.
Okay, so my real life hero is my mother. You know what? Because she lost her husband when she was 36, and she was left behind with no one else but the three of us, me and my two elder sisters. And when I wanted to join the defense, she never said no. She knew what I was going, I mean, what I was choosing in my life. She knew that I have no one to guide me on. If I'm going into that field, you never know if I'm going to come back. I mean, I might not be the same, because the kind of training you undergo, you kind of not have a lot of emotions left. I'm sure Ankita would understand that, you know, after 4 years of training and everything, you're much into your work and you break your emotions and the emotional quotient goes a little low. So my mom always let me, you know, do whatever I want to do in my life, and she never stopped me. She, you know, so I'll tell you, when I got selected in my selection board for army, and I was going to Chennai for the first time, she dropped me at the railway station and she said, "You don't come back, okay, if you're not becoming an officer. I won't. You don't show me your face if you're not coming back as an officer."
Mm.
I had that thing in my head until the last day of my training, until I called her on my day of my pipping. And then I was so relieved that I can actually tell her that I sucked. I just, this Chennai is such a, what do you call it? It sucked. It was so bad because of the weather and other things. I mean, I never wanted to tell her because we got only 2 minutes to speak to our parents. I had no time. In the whole week, I got only 2 minutes to speak to her. Yeah. What could I tell her? Would I cry that, no, mom, I don't like this place? Or will I say that I'm absolutely fine? In those 2 minutes, my main endeavor was to make her happy that I'm absolutely fine and you don't have to worry about me. And that tomorrow I'm going to become an officer. So she kept me moving, and I had only one thing in my mind that, you know, tomorrow I'm going to become an officer and she's going to pip me. So only waiting for that day, I think she's my role model.
You know, Archie, it's so important for women, even older women, to hear you talk about your mother right now, because on the flip side, we have a lot of mothers and fathers and family members who tell their daughters that no matter what problems you face in your marital house, in your in-laws' place, you're not allowed to come back. So the way your mother said, you don't come back to me until you become an officer, it's the exact opposite, that you don't come back to us with a problem, you're not getting divorced. And the other day, I was having a conversation with my mother, and she was like, oh my God, I feel so sorry for this child from your generation who had to go through something horrible in her marriage and then ultimately. And I said, you know what, instead of feeling sorry for her, you know what she needs? She needs a support system. She needs parents and she needs family members who stand up and say that it's okay for you to leave something that you're unhappy in. It's okay for you to step away from something that's making you unhappy.
Absolutely. Yeah. I totally agree with you.
So, thank you for sharing this about your mother.
No, you know, it's very important because in her time, it was even more difficult because I realized it was in 1992 that my dad passed away of cancer, a disease where there was no treatment in India. I mean, in India, there was only one hospital in Bombay where he could have been treated. We got him there, but it was too late. And my mom was told that he has not much time. Imagine at that time when my mom was not even working. And my mom was well educated. She could have worked. But then, no, she had three daughters to take care of. And my dad was doing very well in his life. So he thought that, you know, everything's going to be all right. But then my mom came to know about it and he passed away in 3 months. My mom had nowhere to go. So she promised my dad just one thing, that I will make your daughter study as long as I can. And all of us did. I mean, my sisters are also doing very well, though they are married. They have kids, and but they're all working in their lives and they are pretty much independent. So hats off to my mother. She never made us feel that, you know, we are less important or because we don't have a father, we can't have a father. I mean, my mother was always my father.
Yeah.
She was my brother because we never had a man in my family. So imagine, I never see men, but now where I'm working, I see only men. So it's a contrast. Since I didn't know anybody, since I didn't know how men can be, it is every day is a surprise to me when I go at my workplace. I see different varieties of men. And I'm like, oh my God. I mean, so no, there's nothing against men or anything. But then it's like I have never been with men in my family. It's been two sisters and my mother. That's it. So coming from that kind of a background and entering into an organization which is male dominating, it is very, very difficult to adjust. But then I'm trying to do my bit, and I think I am making my mark, and I want to leave a mark in this organization so that when I get out of this organization, at least people know that, you know, women in the army are just not increasing the number. They are leaving an impact also. So that's what.
Well, Archie, when you were growing up, were there sort of any indications that you'd become like the go-getter that you are today? Like, what were you like as a child? Were you always really enthusiastic to learn new things and to try new things?
Yeah, I was always an enthusiast. In fact, in class 6th, I wanted to become an astronaut. I used to watch videos and everything, and I was so inspired by Kalpana Chawla, and I was like, oh my God, I want to become like her and everything. But then later, I don't know what dragged me towards defense, but that board, no, do you have it in you? I ask myself each day, do I have it in me? Every day of my life, I ask this question. And then, you know what? After the whole damn interview got over, I got a letter saying, yes, you have it in you.
Oh.
That was the biggest thing in my life, and I still have my call letter with me, which reminds me that, yes, I have it in me. That's why I'm here in the defense.
Mm.
So, of course, I was an enthusiast. I wanted to join the Air Force, but then because of my physical standards, because I wanted to fly if I wanted to join the Air Force, but then they check your leg length and other issues. So my leg length was lesser than what was the required standard was.
Yeah.
So I decided to join the Army, and my dream of not flying, I mean, changed into my dream of running on roads. So
I mean, it is very specific. As far as I can remember, to become a fighter pilot, you can't be either too tall or too short. You need to be a specific height.
You need to be factory handmade.
Yeah, you need to be a specific range. I remember telling my dad growing up that because he was a fighter pilot, I was like, I want to become a fighter pilot, or I want to become a pilot. And then and then puberty hit. And at the age of 14, I realized I'm not growing tall anymore. I'm still 4'11". So I never grew tall enough to do anything.
I was also not very tall enough, but then I wanted to fly. I don't know why. I had no clue how can you become a fighter pilot or how can you fly. But then, I was reading about it and I found out that it's somewhere around 99 centimeters to 120 centimeters. It's what you look for to fly an aircraft. But then I was nowhere fitting anywhere. So I chose to join the Army, and I'm very happy being a part of this organization.
So to just round up and end this interview, Archie, are there any current plans or projects that you're working on that you're willing to share with our audience?
Yeah, sure. I'm presently posted here in Delhi in the Army headquarters, and I'm working on this. We are the office of ADGPI, Additional Director General of Public Information, and we are basically the public face of Indian Army. So anything and everything which goes out to public from the Army is from our side. So we are basically into strategic communication and building ethical and viable information for public, and for developing a positive perception for Indian Army. And basically, being an M.Tech, it's a diversification for me. And I am presently into web designing, and I am into this field of communication, which is very less technical, but it is more to do with the connect. Basically, you deal with an audience which can be influenced, and about stories on Facebook. And so all you need is a drive, determination, and decisiveness. And that's how I love and enjoy at present. And I'm loving this social media campaigns which we keep running, and how basically the audience is reacting to the kind of things which we put up, and what do they need. And we are trying to build a good strategy, and I'm hoping that we'll basically influence a lot of audience to build a positive perception management.
Well, Archie, you're a woman in tech, you're a woman in the Army, and you're such a great character, and I can't wait to see what else you have in store for the future. So we're so honored to have been able to interview today, and if any of our listeners want to get in touch with you, how can they do that?
Oh, if you, okay, so they can drop me a mail on my mail ID. So it is VIRGORCHY, VirgoArchie @gmail.com.
Okay, fantastic. Great. Thank you so much for your time today, Archie. Really appreciate the time you've given us on a Sunday, especially.
Thank you so much. No
fantastic.
Sunday suits me.
Okay. Thank you, Archie.
Okay.
And thanks as always, dear listeners, for tuning in this week as well. We're always very grateful for the support you've shown us, and we will be again very grateful if you could go to iTunes and drop us a review. Please drop us a 5-star review, please.
They're not that we're desperate or anything. But if you do have any questions or any queries, you can always drop us an email to mail@theseoutsiders.com, or you can just drop us a message on social media. We're very active on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter as well. And if you do have any specific topics you'd like us to discuss, doesn't have to be interview based, but anything that you want us to talk about, we're more than happy to do that. So please stay in touch with us. We love hearing from you, and we love hearing your feedback. So until next week, I'm Dr. Viz.
And I'm Ankita.
And we are the Desi Outsiders.